This is the one set in 12th century Palestine.
With knights and Saracens.
And King Richard, Coeur de Lion.
Surprise, surprise, the gang gets separated.
And can't return to the TARDIS until they're all back together again.
Now, where have I heard that before?
It's called the Crusade.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space.
Encountering Dalek, Stalinude, and the Cybertronic race.
The Tarans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales.
And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than who back when?
Who back when?
Aloha, and welcome to episode 14. Of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin.
And I'm the Flaphammer.
Yes, you are. And today we are very happy to announce to you, good folks of podcast land, that we will not be reviewing The Web Planet again.
Oh my God. Never, ever shall those words be spoken. Far from now.
Yeah, that being said, I've listened back to that review a couple of times. It is fucking hilarious. Anyway, today we are reviewing The Crusade, which...
which might be less enjoyable to review because it's not so shockingly bad.
Yeah, that's true.
honestly, it wasn't the best historical I've had so far. I did hear some really good stuff about this one before we got into it. But okay. I don't think it is the best historical.
That's what he said? Something?
No, why would he say that?
Before we got into it? That's what they said. Oh, whatever.
Just leave it alone, will you?
That's what she said. So... yeah, well, okay, out of interest, what is your favourite historical so far?
Good question.
massive smoke sound effect.
Yeah. Probably the Reign of Terror. I thought the Reign of Terror was great.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Like, to be fair to this one, like, a lot of the atmosphere was lost by the fact you couldn't even see the final episode, which kind of, you know, took a bit of the wind out of the sails.
Yes, that is true. Hang on, wait, can I just offer you a tiny little piece of trivia before we get started? Because you said your favourite is The Reign of Terror.
I'm sure I can't stop you.
You can't. Try, as you may. So, this, The Crusade, was written by David Whittaker.
Indeed.
David Whittaker. Just looked up his biblio. He's written such fantastic stories as The Edge of Discretion and The Rescue. But he's going to go on to write quite a bunch of cool ones. The Wheel in Space and The Ambassadors of Death, I think both are pretty famous ones. Plus, next up, two Dalek stories, The Power of the Daleks and The Evil of the Daleks. Looking forward to that. However...
so some producer watched The Edge of Discretion and was basically like, this guy is so good, I'm going to give him the flagship of the show.
He does dialogue so well. He does plot.
Yeah. This guy understands logic.
He does climactic finales.
Yeah.
What we want is a story set in 12th century Palestine, and we want a Deus Ex Machina at the end. How can we write a spring into this story? Did they have springs? Okay, check this out. So after I'd seen episode one, or rather at the end of episode one, at the very end of the end credits, it says story editor or script editor or whatever, Dennis Spooner.
Mm.
And I recognised that name.
Yes, you do.
Didn't remember who he was, though. So I looked him up, and he wrote The Reign of Terror.
Indeed.
There you go.
Yeah.
Full circle. That was my tiny bit of trivia at the start there.
Well, that'll explain why this essentially makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I gotta say, up front, some of the dialogues in this serial are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there is one scene in particular, when we get to it, I'll point it out properly, but there is one scene in particular which offers, like, the best acting we've had so far.
Okay. Well, let's get there when we get there. I think we should launch into a bite-sized chunk of Who so that people can maybe work out what's going on, rather than us endlessly babbling on.
That's very true. By the way, people, sorry, still no jingle. We're going to get... So, bite-sized chunk of Who. Nice. Oh my God, we just did
There's
that.
There's the jingle.
That just happened.
I mean, repeat.
All right, here we go. Who wants to start?
I guess I can go. So the TARDIS materialises in 12th century Palestine, and pretty much immediately the troop is ambushed by Saracens and Barb is captured. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, so now they're separated, and Doc, Ian, and Vicky, they hook up with Sir William de Tournabu and head off to see King Richard the Lionheart.
And in the meantime, Barb has been taken to Saladin's, shall we say, encampment, where this sinister guy called El-Kahir?
El-Akir.
El-Akir. He plots to kidnap and enslave her in his harem.
Yeah, or harem. We had a little bit of a debate, like, how do you pronounce this? We had no idea.
Grammar Nazis, please step in.
What do I pronounce? Whatever. Yeah, so to conclude, it's now up to Ian to basically save the day while Doc and Vicky get embroiled in court intrigue.
Yeah, Ian doesn't do that great a job of saving the day.
He does a fantastic job. We're going to get to that.
To be fair, anyway, he has a bit of a drawback. He doesn't exist.
Yeah. In that he goes on holiday. That concludes Bite Size Chunk of Who. Alright. For those of you who haven't seen the serial or indeed listened to it, you know what? Now you're good to go. Shall we start?
Yeah, indeed. Off you go.
Alright. Episode 1. This is a four-parter, by the way. So, part 1, The Lion. Correct. Mm.
Yeah,
I hadn't written that. Anyway, so it starts off in a forest where the TARDIS materializes. Gotta say, right off the bat, there is no TARDIS sound effect when it materializes. In fact, it sounds a little bit like a... Yeah, like there's no...
What do you think happened? Did the sound department, like, lose that file or what?
File. yeah. They were there in, like, some sort of strange 1964 equivalent of Windows.
That's real. Did they lose that reel that played the TARDIS sound effect?
I think it's more like the showrunner's nephew who used to, like, cough the TARDIS sound effect on like, live was ill that week, and therefore they had to go with a wing instead. Doesn't matter. Whatever. It materializes in the woods, and we pan aside to see two Saracens hiding in the bushes whilst two knights... walk past them.
Yeah.
And one of the Saracens like, oh, dude, we're gonna, like, totally murder death kill these people. And the other one's like, no, wait, one of them might be the king.
Mm. Yeah, which is a massive setup. But all the same, the Saracens ambush the TARDIS crew. Ian fights absolutely gallantly.
Wait, dude, you are fucking speeding here. We meet Richard the Lionheart.
Not speeding?
Yeah. Actually, I made a mistake as well. We first see the knights, then the TARDIS returns. Whatever. Before there is any kind of fight, we have Richard the Lionheart, a.k.a. Rico Corleone. He is, like, joking around with his main buds. And from this, we get the historical context. They are, like, in the woods, very close to Jaffa.
Yep.
And they are fighting Saladin, or Saladin's men.
Yeah, Jaffa being Saladin's hometown.
Yeah, bingo bongo. And can I please offer another bit of fucking amazing trivia?
Again, cannot stop you.
No, you can't. Okay, so who plays Rico, Flappy?
I don't know. Who does play Rico?
Rico Corleone is played by freaking Julian Glover.
Who the fuck is Julian Glover?
Okay, I made a little list here in case, out of just nerves, I would forget to say anything here. He was in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Who was he in Indiana Jones?
He's like the bad dude. He was General Veers in Empire. In Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
Yeah. He's in Game of Thrones at the moment as... What's his name? Can't remember. And here's the cool thing, though. Every Christmas, when I growing up as a boy about to turn into a man, every Christmas I would watch Ivanhoe, the TV adaptation of Ivanhoe, with James Mason, Sam Neill, and fucking Julian Glover as whom... King Richard the Lionheart!
No way!
Yes! Fucking once hell. A year, no I would way. Watch him in this role.
So was this how he got cast?
Well, no, dude.
They were like, dude, you're Richard the Lionheart.
Okay, maybe he got cast in Ivanhoe because of this. Who knows? Anyway, whatever. Blam, blam, blam. Doc and the Notorious B.I.V., they have exited, and they literally waste no time being split up. So, Bob is, like, ASAP kidnapped.
Well, she's gagged. In a pretty sexual way, she's gagged and bound and, like, wrestled to the floor.
Yeah, sorry, I just wanted to interject the whole little trivia bit there. Please, carry on.
Yeah, so she's captured. They can't find Barb, obviously, because she's been taken away.
Ian, there's a fight.
Ian has a fantastic fight.
I'm pretty sure, by the way, that Doctor kills someone. Pretty really? Sure he kills a guy. Yeah.
What, a Saracen?
Yeah, because, like, before there's, like, the massive fight, the one that you're referring to with Ian and, like, Arab dude. Before that fight, Doc tussles with one Saracen.
Mm-hmm.
And, correct me if I'm wrong, does he not kill that dude? And do they not then, before, like, Rico Corleone and his buds show up in frame, do they not drag the corpse into the bushes?
Okay. What makes you so certain it was a corpse and not just the Doctor knocked him out?
Because he's, like, on his chest, like, throttling him. He's doing something. It's in the throat area, basically, yeah, is what I'm saying. Pretty sure he's got a knife as well.
Okay, maybe it was, like, a Vulcan death grip or something. I don't know.
Maybe. Anyway, they hear, like, the fighting in the background. Because Rico Corleone and his buds and the Saracens, they've now, like, just... They are having...
A fuck-off fight.
A big fight club, yeah. So then, yeah, they basically just get caught in the crossfire, right?
Yeah. So the Crusaders are fighting with the Saracens. There's a guy there who claims that he's the king, but because of what we saw in the first scene, we know that he's not the king.
Yeah, essentially, like, everyone gets either killed or injured. Yeah. Rico himself is injured.
Yeah, the Saracens win, basically.
Yeah, basically. Right. And in order to save Rico, one of his main hombres...
Yeah, and this is William something or other.
Yeah, you said this before, William de Tournabu.
No, this is a different William.
Oh, no, yeah, you're right. Well, anyway, okay, I call him King Ralph in my notes, because he pretends to be the king, essentially, in order to save Rico. So when,
that's right.
When the Saracens now believe that they've captured the king, they're like, dude, that's fucking awesome. Let's just go back to Saladin's pad and just walk out with a cocktail.
They completely buy it.
Yeah, exactly. So they then leave, and in the meantime, we get that massive, massive tussle between... There's like a dual tussle. We've got Doc and one Saracen on one side, and we've got Ian and another Saracen on the other side. And there's like... It is vicious, man. It's super vicious. You pointed out the whole... Like, before we press record, ladies and gentlemen, sorry about that. Pointed out the whole, like, he pulls a branch and, like, slaps the guy.
Great.
Like, branch whips him.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And then, like, he uppercuts the dude.
Yeah.
So vicious. Awesome. Doc, meanwhile, is, like, tussling. He picks up a sword. He starts fencing with the guy. Or he's about to start fencing with him. And some other guy who's, I call him Captain Marvelous in my notes, the dude, it's like one of the knights, he's literally got an arrow stuck in his heart.
Yeah.
Pulls the arrow out, picks up his own sword and throws it sharp end first.
The message is they made him tough in them days.
Yeah. He throws and literally just punctures the guy's chest with his sword. Straight off the bat, we are maybe 5 minutes into part one of this four-parter, and Doc has killed one dude, Captain Marvelous has killed another one. And
Ian has beaten the shit out of someone. I don't think he killed him.
No, I don't think he killed him either. Yeah.
But once the fighting all sort of dies down, Doc, Vicky and Ian tend to one guy who's left behind, who turns out to be William de Tournabu, who is like one of Richard the Lionheart's like right-hand men, right?
Captain Marvelous, you mean?
I don't know who you are.
The guy who pulls the arrow out of his chest.
I don't remember him pulling an arrow out. Oh, he must have. Yeah, it is that guy. So they're tending to him on the floor. The doc now suggests they split up.
Mm. Again.
He and Vicky are going to go down to the city, and basically Ian's going to stay behind and look after this guy.
Yeah, Captain Marvelous.
Yeah.
By the way, did you see how Vicky turned up? Like, she was in the TARDIS, or by the TARDIS. She heard the commotion. She wasn't near the actual fight, but she heard the commotion. The first thing she does is, like, she approaches with, like, this big fuck-off rock in her hands. It is as large as her torso. And basically just goes, "Can I help?" Like, wait, she's got this murderous gene in her. Yeah. She just wants to go and bash someone's skull in.
No wonder she loves the Doctor so much.
I know, they get along.
Her personal hero, right?
Totally.
Anyway, the reason that they're going to the city, or they feel they need to go to the city, is that they have to find Richard the Lionheart, because that's the only way they're going to get Barb back.
Yeah.
And Ian, like, is going to take William de Tournabu back to Richard's court when he's better?
No, not really. Like, first Ian leaves, because he's looking for Barbara, and then he comes back, and when he comes back...
He doesn't look long.
No, I know. It's like, for us, it's maybe a couple of minutes. Vic says, "You've been gone for hours."
Right.
It's like, wait, you actually wandered around the woods on your own for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Didn't care to, like, tell this elderly gentleman and his preteen companion
to hang around.
Or anything. But yeah, so he's back. And then the only reason they get separated is, like, Doc tells Ian, "Stay here, guard Captain Marvelous."
Yeah.
"We're going to go and get some clothes." He doesn't. This it confused me a little bit. Why doesn't he just go bring him into the TARDIS? He's basically knocked out. Like, he's basically unconscious. Just put him in the TARDIS. It is safer
there. He has had an arrow through his chest.
Yeah. It's probably safer to put him inside the time machine.
They could even maybe try and patch that shit up.
Exactly. They don't.
No,
they don't.
But he's fine, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He's totally just... 100%. Meanwhile, we get to see what's happening to Bob.
Yeah, so she is talking to William DePrue. I found his name.
King Ralph.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah, he's pretending to be Richard. And between them, they decide that Bob should masquerade as Joanna, Richard the Lionheart's sister.
Exactly, because he is pretending to be Richard the Lionheart.
Yeah, so who the fuck is she other than, like, a petty slave?
Yeah.
In order for her to not get killed and for her to matter, they say she's Joanna.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, there is this almost tender moment where he looks at her with a twinkle in his eyes and he goes, like, by the way, sis, I am 100% a fan of incest. But, so now they're, like, best buds.
Yeah.
Yeah. This does not pan out, by the way. They're best buds, but, like, we don't get to see any more of this relationship.
Well, there's no development. They're friends of consequence.
Okay.
What's the term? Friends of circumstance.
Circumstance. Mm-hmm. So then, like, Saladin's head hombre...
Yeah, Elakir.
Elakir.
Henceforth, evil dude.
Evil dude. See, I couldn't really think of a name for him, so he's just Mr. Bigglesworth in my notes.
I think Elakir is pretty bad.
That's pretty badass.
Pretty badass.
Yeah.
He's talking shit to them. It's just like, things are going to not work out well for you.
Yeah, basically, just another note, sorry to interject, but like, he turns up in this tent with his gods. Now, his gods are composed of three genuine, honest-to-God black dudes. This is the get to see any people of... any other ethnic background than English.
Yeah,
like, pasty white.
Because they're normally in blackface. I mean, Saladin
was
in
blackface. Yeah, I was going to say, three black dudes, one white dude who's, like, faux Middle Eastern, and then one pasty white dude actually in blackface. Like,
but
how do you think these three actual black guys felt standing next to a guy in the most racist blackface ever?
And
it's ridiculous.
It's as if neo-Nazis destroyed the BBC archives, because the stories where we're going to see a lot of these black actors were the ones that were destroyed.
Those black actors
turn up a lot in episode 2.
They don't get any speaking parts.
No, they don't. They're like henchmen.
Yeah, and later on, I think in part 3, is it? Where the two gods are being throttled by Beardy Guy. And one of them is a black dude. And he gets, like, the dumbest death ever. I swear to God, I don't mean to sound paranoid, but I reckon there's, like, a level of racism operating behind this.
Do you think?
Yeah, no, but, like, it's insane. It is, it's so racist. But, okay, anyway, so Elakir, Mr. Bigglesworth.
Yeah, basically King Ralph says to him, look, you've got to treat us well. He knows that Saladin's a good guy. Saladin's gone down in history as a good guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's a fair and just person to be fighting.
Yeah, but he's also, like, sorry, not he, Mr. Bigglesworth is a total opportunist, because
he is...
What
the hell is Mr. Bigglesworth?
Elakir, dude, right. Keep up.
Just call him Elakir, then. Jesus.
Well, I'm looking at my notes here. So he is, like... He's chopped to bits.
Uh-huh.
Not because he's got King Ralph, he thinks King Rico, but because he has King Rico's sister.
Yeah.
The fucking princess, which is also nice.
And it is known, is it already known at this point, that Saladin's brother, whose name is...
Saffadin,
that's right. Desperately wanted Joanna anyway. Like, he's been after Joanna for quite some time.
Oh, really? I think. You're probably right. There were a lot of parts of dialogue in the Sultan's encampment in particular, when Saladin's encampment in particular, that I didn't really get. Like, either because it was too convoluted or because the audio levels weren't good enough or whatever, but I just didn't get them.
What a shame.
Whatever. Cut to the Doctor stealing some clothes.
Yeah, so we're in downtown Jaffa.
Yeah.
In the middle of the marketplace, and we see, like, this...
Morbidly obese,
greasy merchant. Speaking to the Doctor, and saying, like, I've got some, like, really great clothes in from Basra.
Yeah.
And it's revealed, basically, by a guy who turns up, who steals the stolen goods to bring it in.
I've got him down as all the not Vinnie Jones.
Yeah. Why?
Because he looks exactly like Vinnie Jones, but obviously Vinnie Jones probably not yet born.
No, he would have been born.
Okay,
he'd have been born. Like,
not
he'd
quite...
be like five.
He's five, but he's not quite rough enough yet. So anyway, not Vinnie Jones steps in.
Yeah, and basically says, yeah, all your stuff in your shop is stolen. And
yeah, because he fucking stole it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the dude who stole... He turns up with more stolen clothes that he's, like, stolen from the palace.
Exactly.
Right?
Long story short, the Doctor overhears this and basically justifies theft. on the basis that it's already been stolen.
Yeah, well, later on, we get, like, the proper justification of it.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I didn't get.
But already, we get a little, yeah. It's, you know, it's already been stolen. This isn't really stealing. This is, like, borrowing.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah. What did you think of the weird MacGyver way in which he steals these clothes? Like, Vicky is hiding underneath some sort of top outside, mm-hmm. being utterly useless. The Doctor, the second not Vinnie Jones steps in, the Doctor hides underneath a table with, like, clutching all these clothes, throws a shoe at Vicky, and then, like, ties a rope to the end of a table or something. He, like, totally MacGyvers this place completely unnecessarily to distract obese merchant dude and then escape with clothes.
Yeah.
Basically. Well, actually, he doesn't escape. Does he say, like, you know what? These clothes are fantastic. I'll come back tomorrow.
As I remember it, he talked his way out. Yeah. He like, steals all the clothes, gets it out to Vicky, and then starts talking to the guy and is like, oh, no, I'll be back, sir. I'll be back. Don't worry.
Yeah.
And he's taking all the stuff. I feel that the market trader has genuinely been robbed.
I feel that as well.
Like, it's... Like,
he kind of, well, he gets paid later on, so it's fine.
Well, he gets paid later on. But, like, if you think about his life... Like, yeah, okay, he buys stolen goods.
Yeah, but he doesn't have a choice.
But he pays...
This guy probably has 12 kids waiting at home. Like, he needs the money.
But he pays real money for these stolen goods. Mm. Okay, he might be getting them cheap, but he's still paying for them, and they're stolen from him.
Yeah, exactly.
The Doctor, he is just straight up stealing.
Yeah, he's a clothing fence.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he is.
I felt really bad for him, basically. I don't think the Doctor has any justification whatsoever.
He actually seems like a nice guy as well.
Yeah, he's alright.
Yeah.
Like, when he turns up later, he's pretty cool.
Yeah, totally. Anyway, Blammo back at the Sultan's encampment.
Yeah, and we don't actually see Saladin yet. We see Saffredin.
Saffredin, yeah.
Saffredin,
it's Saladin,
yeah.
And Saffredin.
Yeah, Saladin and Saffredin. So, Saffredin, his brother.
Yeah.
And he's... with Ella Keir?
Yeah, he's talking to Mr. Bigglesworth, who's, like, telling him, dude, I've got the sister here. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
Saffredin is, like, so mega chuffed. He's like, bring her in!
Yeah. I think, again, because he's been after her for quite some time.
No, you're totally right.
Yeah.
You're 100%
but
correct.
But the second he sees Barb...
Is it him, or is it not... Because no, Saladin pops his head out after a while.
I think Saffredin notices... First.
Okay.
I think he's the first one to notice
that wouldn't make
this,
more sense.
This is bullshit.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it's because he says, when the fake Richard comes in, he says, you're not fucking Richard, you don't have red hair.
Oh, you're right.
And then Saladin overhears that, comes out, and he's like, yeah, some bullshit is occurring here.
By the way, I'm going to interrupt with more trivia time, dude.
Okay.
Okay, check this out. So, the Sultan is played by Bernard Kay.
Uh-huh.
That name rang a bell. IMDb'd him. Guess who he played?
Go on.
Tyler Durden.
No way.
He played Tyler Durden in Dalek Invasion of Earth.
Wow.
Yeah. How awesome
Good.
Is that?
Good stuff.
Yeah. And, wait for it, Mr.
Nice
Bigglesworth.
To see him getting more work.
I know. Oh, and he's going to turn up in two more serials. He's going to turn up in The Faceless Ones and super famous Colony in Space.
Wow.
Yeah. And Mr. Bigglesworth, a.k.a. Ella Keir, if you want, is played by Walter Randall, who also appeared as Tonila in The Aztecs.
Wow.
Awesome, right?
Yes, that's
we see the first, like, recycling of actors. I think that's great.
I don't think it's the first.
No, it's probably not the first.
I think we've had recyclement before, but maybe not on this scale.
Yeah, like we had the old guy who was William Hartnell's double.
Yeah.
We talked about before.
That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Bob is like a legitimate bozo.
Go on.
Because everyone leaves except Saladin and Bob.
Saffredin? Is that right?
Oh, maybe. No, I've got it down as Saladin. Maybe Saffredin is there as well. It doesn't matter. Bob is there. King Ralph leaves, though, as does Mr. Bigglesworth.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob is like a complete bozo, because she's asked, what are you doing here? And she literally says, we arrived in a box from a planet of insects with a shitty plot, and before then we were in ancient Rome with, like, Mr. Nero.
Yeah.
And Blackface Sultan.
Yeah, it's basically like, oh, I get it. You're a player.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. You're an actor. But that's ridiculous. Why would she say that? She is clearly, like, under threat of death.
Well, it's kind of worked for her before. I mean, I guess saying something so ridiculous it can't possibly be true would kind of get you out of the jam. Somebody would
really
believe you're insane, or...
See, I assume under any, like, normal circumstances, let's say normal circumstances exist within a context in which you have travelled back in time and you're talking to Blackface Sultan.
Uh-huh.
If you say that you were just on a planet of insects, he's going to go, you know what? A, I'm going to rape you to death, and B, I'm going to string you up somewhere. I mean, that is ridiculous. That wouldn't swing.
Don't forget, Barb is a history teacher, and she knows how cool Saladin is.
Anyway,
truly is cool.
Yeah. So, Bing Bong, VID, they've had their wardrobe change now, and they've brought...
And by the way, a special thanks to the BBC for not being racist about Saladin. Like, they were... Yeah. Like, they actually fairly represented that he was a cool guy.
Yeah.
They could have gone completely the other way and made him, like... Or just made all of the Arabs, like, scurrilous, dirty dogs.
Yeah,
but
that's
didn't.
True.
They didn't have
That's
all.
True, yeah. There's actually just one character who is...
Yeah, which you need for plot development.
I think so.
But, like... In actual representation of another culture versus English culture,
yeah,
pretty damn fair.
Yeah, yeah. Well done.
Well done.
So, VID has had their wardrobe change, and now...
But the crux of that conversation is that Saladin says, I respect your bravery, like, in basically giving me this bullshit.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And you're to have the freedom of the city, basically.
Yeah.
So you're going to have, what is it he says, all of liberty except liberty.
Liberty itself. Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
And asks bad guy El-Akir to enforce that.
Yeah, so then VID has had a wardrobe change. So now they've brought Captain Marvelous before King Rico, who mainly just complains about his brother John, which is cool, even though like I'd like to have heard more about that throughout this story.
And also, like, I've always thought that was like a historical fallacy. Like, John isn't bad a king.
Yeah,
he's
know.
Actually a really good administrator.
Like, that sort of furthers the whole Robin Hood myth.
He is the best king, like, of that period. He's the best king at moving, like, admin on. Like, he develops a modern kingship. He's actually really good.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Whilst Rico Corleone is off in Palestine trying to behead people for not being Christians, he's actually, you know, tending to infrastructure.
Adding up the books,
exactly.
Putting in roads, building schools, and all the while being told he's a cunt. I mean, it's not right.
And then, according to Mel Brooks, having toilets named after him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, harsh, right?
Yeah.
But, like, the reason he hates him, he explains, and this might well be the case, is that he's trading with Philip of France.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, therefore, indirectly with Saladin himself.
Is that actually being said?
I think so.
He is trading with the enemy, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
that's
he doesn't mind going behind his brother's back.
Sure.
Yeah.
So then with Ian in the lead, they compel him to give them an escort to go and negotiate for Barb's release.
Yeah, and initially he's like, no fucking way.
Yeah, he's like, we do not negotiate with terrorists.
Yeah.
And that's essentially the climax of part one.
That's the climax of part one, and I'm so sad we didn't get to see the result of that climax. Because episode two, The Knight of Jaffa, is all still
the
framed.
King of Jaffa.
Sorry, is it?
I've got
no, it's the Knight.
Jaffa. Oh, that makes so much more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the Knight of Jaffa is...
Sir Ian.
Sir Ian of Jaffa. But yeah, The Knight of Jaffa is all still images.
Yeah, exactly.
And audio, which I think I made a reasonable attempt at like trying to cobble it together.
So yeah, Knight of Jaffa starts off with the Doc finally convincing Rico to send a messenger to bargain for his knights, King Ralph, and Barb's lives. And
he basically talks Richard Ram by telling him it's going to be really embarrassing for Saladin. They've captured the wrong king.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And
he's going to look at it. You're in a strong bargaining position. Let's get this done.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool the way he does it, because he said, like, you know what? You could actually just go back home now and tell stories of what an idiot he is.
Yeah.
And he would want to avoid that.
Yeah.
And also you can then say, like, we'll give you 100 of your men that we've captured in exchange for our knights.
Yeah.
In a sense, giving him, like, making him an offer he can't refuse, but also at the same time kind of alluding to the fact that, you know what, our knights are just 100 times better than yours, which is pretty cool. So anyway, who's this messenger going to be? Blam, enter Joanna, who is about 8,000 times, give or take, hotter than her facsimile.
I don't know, Barb was looking pretty good.
Bob was looking good, but you know what? Princess...
Joanna's hot.
Yeah, yeah. Princess Hottie Mc tight buns. Oh my god, she is stunning.
Uh-huh.
Oh, dude, wait for it. Trivia time.
Wow, she's going to return.
See
that coming.
Yeah, she's going to return in the form of a future companion.
Really?
That actress is going to be a future companion.
A really hot future companion.
I know, I'm so looking forward to it! Oh my god.
Under what doctor?
I don't know. Maybe Hartnell. I have no idea. Anyway.
Whatever. Really cool.
Yeah, very cool, right?
Okay, that's the first piece of impressive trivia you've given me.
Oh, shut up. Dude, the trivia I've given you has been worth its weight in gold.
That's the first time your trivia has moved me.
Yeah. Anyway, so Princess Tightbuns, she's basically just, like, why the fuck is Captain Marvelous just up and about?
At this point, we get the first lie from the Doctor that he's going to be called out on, where Vicky is introduced as Victor.
Yeah.
So, for some reason, the Doctor decides to try and pass Vicky off as a boy. I don't really, like, for a start, I don't really see how that helps.
Can I just say that in my notes...
First up, I don't know how that helps.
I know, not at all. But, like, in my notes, I didn't catch the fact that he introduces her as Victor. I didn't catch that at all. I didn't hear that. So at one point, I say, by the way, Vicky, who has done nothing this entire story so far, continues to do nothing.
Yeah.
And everybody just thinks she's some annoying little boy who's somehow wandered into the King's Chamber.
Well, essentially, that's true.
Yeah. And then, like, 2 minutes later, I have actually written in all caps, holy fuck, I was just kidding. They do think she's a boy.
But this is the first, like, so the Chamberlain comes in, so the like, head examiner of the court comes in, and he's looking at Vicky very suspiciously, not so much because it's a boy.
No, but because she's wearing clothes.
Because she's wearing clothes that may have been stolen.
Yeah, from the Chamberlain, apparently.
Yeah.
And
we'll get more on that later.
By the way, I've got a soundbite just to show how absolutely useless everyone thinks that he, she is.
Hmm?
Soundbites?
Soundbites.
Soundbites.
Shall I help?
No, I think we can manage.
We're back to the good old days of Susan.
Yeah, I know, it's so good.
I can do stuff. No, you can't.
There's such a lovely soundbite of absolute 1964 sexism coming up at the end of this serial.
Cool. Wish it wanted, do it. So in terms of plot development, we are told here, Richard's really confused at how nice Saladin is. He keeps sending him gifts. So apparently Richard was ill like a month ago and Saladin like sent him some like healing balm and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's true. But he also sent some jewels to Princess Hottie Goodcheeks.
Mm-hmm. But that wasn't Saladin.
That was Saffredin. Sorry, you're right.
And that's the other thing we find out. Saffredin desperately wants Joanna.
Mm.
And Richard's sort of trying to dream up ways of using that against them or using that as a healing device.
That's true. Did you also think, by the way, that Rico Corleone and Hottie Goodcheeks are very touchy-feely?
No, I did not notice.
Maybe it's just me.
Again, since it was, like, still images.
I know, there's a great still image.
Did you hear that in their voices?
Or? No, there's a great still image of, like, his hands just planted all over her face.
Right.
It's fantastic.
Maybe it was just uncontextualized still imagery.
Yeah. And actually, can you explain something to me? Here's one bit where I've actually written that I didn't really understand what he said. Rico says that he longs to return to Blighty, right?
Yeah.
But he just cannot stop fighting because that would sort of he would lose face if he did in a way. And he says, I think that he wants one town in particular. And as long as Saladin won't give it up, further blood will be shed, essentially.
Right.
Which, is that Jaffa? Is that what he wants to do? Does he want to steal Jaffa from...
I don't know. Like, I honestly don't know. I struggled with this episode, to be honest, because I couldn't see anything.
Anyway. So, back at Sultana Central, Mr. Bigglesworth is throttling this poor old lady for not wanting to bring a ring to... at this point, I didn't know. I was like, to some woman, but I'm assuming it's to Bob. Mm-hmm. Because this old lady, it transpires, she's like the handmaiden in charge of Bob, right?
Right.
And then cut to this merchant from Genoa.
Yeah, Luigi.
Looks like Mario.
Yeah.
He turns up and he wants to set up like a trade route.
Yeah, well, he basically wants an audience with Saladin.
Exactly.
So that he can set up that trade route.
Mm.
And Elakir comes to a little agreement with him.
Yeah.
He wants revenge on Bar. Bar's made him look an idiot.
Yeah.
Because Saladin was all sort of like, I want to fuck you hard.
Okay.
Yeah. So...
I've got a couple of questions for you, dude.
In exchange, Luigi's going to help capture Barb.
Yeah.
While Elakir grants an audience.
Not necessarily help capture. He's going to just get her for him.
Mm.
Yeah. Here are my questions, okay?
Okay, that does raise an obvious question.
Yeah, question number one. How could this Italian dude release one of the Sultan's prisoners?
Yeah.
Yeah. Question number two. Whom was the ring meant for? Because if Mr. Bigglesworth wants to kill or whatever Barbara, why would he bring her a gift, right? And number three...
Lure her, maybe.
Question three, So, Mr. Bigglesworth, with regard to Barbara Largehair, shag, marry, kill. Tell me.
Kill?
Kill.
Yeah.
In that case, if it's kill, then the ring doesn't make sense. If it's shag, then it does make sense. Sorry, then the ring...
Are those three things mutually exclusive? I mean, shag, then kill?
Yeah, I get... I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I think it's, like, something to lure her in. But it does raise, like, the first question is a good one. Why
would this Italian dude have that power?
Well, yeah, if Saladin has, like, given them the freedom of the city,
yeah,
why would it be okay to just capture Barb?
Yeah, well, A, why would it be okay to just capture, and B, why couldn't Mr. Bigglesworth just do it himself? Like, if they're free to just wander around, then that's fine.
I wondered that, but were they trying to set it up so that it looked like Barb was trying to escape and that's why it's okay to capture her?
No, I think that's just what happened later on.
Right.
And they could have captured her literally anywhere. She's free to roam as she wants,
mm-hmm.
which she doesn't, by the way, because she never has a chance to,
mm-hmm.
then wouldn't it be easier to just capture her when she's not in the Sultan's tent?
You would think so.
Yeah. Anyway, whatever. So now we get to see the old lady is Barbara's, like, monkey handler. And she... Well, I say monkey handler because Barbara now is... She's there to, like, tell stories and entertain the Sultan. And she would be kept alive as long as she entertains him,
yeah.
right? So she's now thinking, like, oh, which stories could I plagiarize? Like, oh, yeah, Romeo and Juliet and, like, stuff by H.C. Anderson and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then, bing-bong, Mario enters and he gets Barb the heck out of Dodge. But he accidentally drops one of his gloves. And then that glove is promptly discovered by the old lady. So, like, weirdly, it took Mario maybe 5 minutes to kidnap Barb. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is, like, a time cut. I literally think this is real time. Because he is in the tent. He basically just goes next door, tells her, hey, come with me. And that's it. Yeah. Why couldn't Mr. Bigglesworth do this himself? But yeah, so then old lady discovers the glove. And Barb is taken to the stables, where she is apprehended by Mr. Bigglesworth, who, at this point, clearly just does not wish her well.
Yeah.
He, like, jumps out from behind, throttles her a little bit, and just goes, you are mine now.
Yeah, he's upset. Like, well, to be fair, some woman has embarrassed him. Like, I think in olden Arab times, like, that was pretty grave.
Yeah, I don't want to sound too judgmental, but, you know, like, in modern day Arab times?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It still wouldn't be good.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not the best thing ever.
Yeah.
So, we cut back to Richard.
No, it's Ian.
Oh, well, we see Doc Ian and Vicky basically just dressing up in period clothes for, like...
Yeah, they're dressing up Ian in period clothes.
Yeah.
And, like, he gets a sword and everything.
Yeah. Like, so he looks like Serene. But that lasts, like, 10 seconds.
That's true. Well, like, Doctor says, like, oh, with all this gear that you're getting, I reckon Rico wants to still send you off to Jaffa.
Yeah.
Or to wherever. Spoiler alert, Doc. You know, mm-hmm. that's going to happen. But then we get to Rico, so go for it.
Yeah, so Richard is dictating a letter to Saffredine.
Yeah.
In which he's basically saying, I will give you Joanna.
Yeah, exactly. Hot Cheek is all yours.
Yeah, in exchange for, we want some prisoners back, essentially, Barb and William, whatever his name is, William Dupreux.
Yeah, King Ralph.
Yeah, we want them back, and in exchange we'll arrange a marriage.
Yeah, and precisely.
There will be less bloodletting, and we'll make some sort of uneasy peace.
Mm.
And at which point, Richard makes Ian an official emissary, and as such...
Yeah, he knights him.
Yeah,
so he's now...
It's touching. Sir Ian, Knight of Jaffa.
Which is fan-freaking-tastic.
Again, always knew you could do it, Ian.
Yeah, and that very weird scene here, I think, because Sir Ian, he leaves... And Doc says he almost
brave,
wishes...
Brave Sir Ian.
I was thinking about the same thing. So,
he cuts and shoots and runs.
I was thinking the same thing. Oh, well done. So, brave Sir Ian, he leaves.
Sir Robin.
Yeah, Sir Robin. Brave Sir Robin. Yeah, anyway, so brave Sir Ian, he leaves, and Doc says he almost wishes he'd been knighted too, at which point Vicky goes, that'll be the day... What the shit, Vapor Rub? What do you know? You are literally just a stable boy.
And like the Doc has had shitloads of accolades over the years.
I know!
Like, he's an official friend to, like, hundreds of planets.
To freaking everyone of importance in the universe.
Whatever.
Ugh. Anyway, so then the Chamberlain enters with a fat merchant who accuses them of theft.
Yeah, and he realises, yeah, they definitely stolen some shit.
Yeah, and then Not Vinnie Jones arrives, and then the Doc gets the Chamberlain to pay the merchant. What? I missed something there.
So I think basically what happens is the Doctor does explain away what's happened.
Mm.
And he explains that the only way that these clothes could have possibly been stolen is by somebody on the inside, and not Vinnie Jones is the guy on the inside.
Yeah, exactly.
Which makes the Chamberlain look like an idiot.
True.
And the Chamberlain's like, okay.
Oh, I see. So then in order to not lose face, he then pays him as though he had actually bought them.
Exactly. The Doctor basically explains away that what he did wasn't stealing, because it was theft in the first place from a guy who was on the inside of the Chamberlain's court.
Oh, the book is so cool.
Yeah. It's really clever.
Mm.
It's like relativism or something. He uses a superior philosophical argument.
It's sophistry, is what it is.
Yeah, that is what it is.
So anyway, we get a cutscene. Sorry, let's press on. We get a cutscene of Bob escaping.
Yeah.
And then meanwhile, Sir Ian meets King Ralph, who basically says everyone believes Mario's lie that Bob had the hots for Mr. Bigglesworth and left with him, which is just so weird.
Yeah.
Because a moment ago, we realized that everything was just founded on lies, and then all of a sudden, the same people who said that these things were lies are now saying, you know what, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's totally cool. Sorry, we missed a bit. So Mario turns up and has a chat with Saladin.
We did miss that. So he's getting his audience.
Exactly, with Saladin and Saffredin. And
they talk about the abduction of Barbara.
Exactly, King Ralph and the old lady arrive, and then basically she produces the glove, Saladin recognises the glove, and blammo, Ralph is now at Mario's throat.
Importantly, King Ralph is there, which gives him the opportunity later to explain the whole thing to Ian.
Yeah, but not just that. Mario. Mario literally says, whilst King Ralph is at his throat, he literally says, yes, I admit, I took her to Mr. Bigglesworth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe 5 minutes later, he has told the same people that he confessed to that, you know what, she had the hots for Mr. Bigglesworth and now they basically eloped. And Saladin, who knows that Mario is full of shit and that Mr. Bigglesworth is an asshole, he basically goes, yeah, I buy it. That makes no sense whatsoever.
Maybe he just doesn't give a shit.
Anyway, ipso facto, so Ian's going to go fuck with Mr. Bigglesworth.
Yeah, because, you've confused me with all your nicknames.
Mr. Bigglesworth.
Who's Mr. Bigglesworth?
Like Ian.
Oh, okay, Mr. Bigglesworth. So King Ralph has basically told Ian that Barb's probably going to be made part of the harem, right?
Yeah.
Which adds the tension.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to Barb fleeing through the streets.
Well, is she in the street? I think she's still in the palace.
Is she? I thought it looked like a market.
Oh, maybe it is the market. Maybe you're right.
It looked like she was running in amongst the market stalls. Again, still images, hard to tell.
Yeah.
But she's being chased by a bunch of guards and sentries.
Two guards.
Two.
Two guards. One white, fake Middle Eastern dude and one black guy.
And as she's running away and hiding, some guy grabs her face.
Yeah. Bam.
End Boom. Of episode 2.
Episode 3, The Wheel of Fortune!
The Wheel of Fortune! So it turns out that guy who clasps her face, surprise, surprise, is a good guy.
Yeah, beardy dude.
And he introduces himself as Harus or something.
Yeah, before he does that, he Jason Statham's the two dogs.
Oh, yeah,
the
sorry.
Two gods.
Yes.
He stands Vord style in a doorway and then performs the dumbest grab kill ever on, this is what I meant before, on the black guy.
Right,
just puts his hands on his shoulders or something, and the black guy just dies.
Yeah.
That's it. And then he's dragged away. And then the white dude, again, fucking racist 1964, the white dude, fake Middle Eastern guy, he turns up, and they have an actual fight, but he loses, because he, beardy guy, he knows Jason Statham Kung Fu.
Well, I guess you could say, with the first guard, he was taken by surprise. The second one, not so much.
Ugh. Whatever.
I'm not trying to defend the 60s. I'm just saying.
Yeah, sure.
There could be a reasonable explanation.
No,
let's not just assume racism.
No, it's fine. Okay, fine. Anyway, so then, and he explains that they have a common enemy. He and Bob, they have a common enemy in Mr. Bigglesworth.
He hates Elakir because Elakir killed his whole family.
Yeah, exactly. He killed the wife and the son and kidnapped the eldest daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it turns out a lot of people have this same problem with Elakir.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a wonder he's made it this far.
Yeah. So then cut back to, King Rico's pad,
mm-hmm.
where the morbidly obese merchant is giving Doc some new clothes.
Yeah.
And then...
And again, Vicky's being dressed as a boy.
Yeah, well, she's going to be dressed as a boy. It's like, oh, yeah. I shall make you look like a beautiful peacock.
Yeah.
And then, shortly thereafter, however, she basically exposes her gender to Princess Holly Tightbuns,
mm-hmm.
who is, again, absolutely stunning, by the way. And,
thanks for that. Needed reminding.
She's gorgeous. So anyway, she at first is slightly, well, ticked off by this, but then...
Not very.
It doesn't last very long. She's like, you know what? It's fine. You're now going to be my
and
BFF.
Then, yeah. Basically, yeah. Like, she's a little bit upset about the deception. Like, why did you do that? But then says, do you know what? I sense I can trust you. She actually says, I sense you're older than the skies, and therefore you're great. So, like... Let's just, like, team up on stuff, you know?
So,
and then for some reason, Joanna offers Vicky her protection.
Yeah, exactly. Offers her protection, calls for the Chamberlain,
mm-hmm.
who turns up, and then she orders him to bring all these, like, fine dresses for Vicky.
Yeah, so tells him about the deception, and he just has to sit there and take it.
Yeah, and we have another soundbite, which is, like, so... I don't know if... Anyway, whatever it is, it's clearly judgmental, and it probably does reflect the times just a little bit. Soundbite?
Soundbite.
Sad soundbite.
I don't understand.
It's perfectly simple. I'm a girl.
A girl? Dressed as a boy? Is nothing understandable these days?
Yeah.
Yeah.
1964.
Well, you know, homosexuality in England wasn't made legal.
Exactly.
It was still illegal. It wasn't until 1967.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hence, sad soundbite.
Sad soundbite.
Yeah.
Don't worry, we're only like 3 years away.
So anyway, now Vapor Rub is going to get some dresses, and then they have, like, this combo, she and Doc, they have this combo in which she goes, like, oh, you would never leave me, would you? Like, and he basically reassures her, no, he will protect her, and then he taps her nose with his finger and hugs her because, and this is what my notes say, because, Flapjack, she's just a child.
Or could it be... But the age gap between them is just too ridiculous for anybody to even consider.
You know what? That age gap is marginally wider than the age gap between him and, let's say, Ian or Barbara. He never taps Ian's nose.
Whatever.
Yeah, anyway.
He calls him my boy. He's like 30.
He's 30?
Yeah.
He's older than 30, dude. He's got to be older than 30.
I don't know that he is.
Oh, now I feel so emasculated. I'm 30.
Yeah, so what?
He's, like, so much more of a man than I am.
Do you know what? Like, when you read about historical times, the shit people had done by the time they were 18, life was shorter.
I know.
Don't feel bad.
It's more intense.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now, cut back to Beady Magoo, who's brought Barb to his house, where his other daughter, Safiya, is prepping some dins.
Yeah, so we get to hear the whole story, the whole sordid tale of Harus.
Exactly.
Which is that his whole family were killed, his wife, his son, and his other daughter?
No, this is what, we said this before, that the other daughter, the eldest daughter was kidnapped.
Oh yeah, sorry, the other daughter, his wife and his son were murdered.
Yeah,
and
the house was burned down, the daughter was kidnapped.
Yeah, that's right.
And now he basically just lives for two things. One, kill Mr. Bigglesworth.
Yeah.
Two, rescue his daughter, right? And then he leaves to, like, go and do these things, as per usual.
And gives Barb a knife.
Yeah, a dagger, like, fucking awesome, right?
And then says, if Elakir comes, like, not to attack him, kill my daughter and yourself.
Yeah, because otherwise you're going to be raped and murdered.
Yeah.
Yeah, and death is preferable, basically. Then he leaves.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Hard times.
Yeah, and Safiya, by the way, has no idea what happened to her family.
No, she's labouring under the illusion that everybody's just kind of disappeared.
Yeah, and they're going to come back someday.
Yeah.
Cut to Beardy Dude immediately being captured by a soldier and Mr. Bigglesworth himself.
Yeah.
Like, what are the fucking odds?
Yeah, I know. They immediately go in and search his house anyway. Isn't that what happens?
No, that happens in a little bit. We cut back to the castle. By the way, I've got a question for you before you press on.
Mm-hmm.
There's a castle. There's an actual medieval, like, European-style castle in which Rico Corleone and his like, dudes are.
Is it an actual castle?
I think it's an actual castle, dude.
Like a Motton Bailey kind of, like, you know, like a proper...
Why do they have a castle? Why are they not in tents, by the way?
I guess they have been there a long time. Maybe they put up a castle. I don't know. I don't know enough
about it. Mobile castle?
Yeah, like... Like a Lego castle? I don't know.
Yeah, anyway, so basically we get this little cutscene with Rico Corleone, the Lord of Leicester.
Yeah, who is a bastard. Well, he's a bastard. He's vicious.
He's vicious and a total bore, for which reason I refer to him as Leicester Square.
There's nothing wrong with Leicester Square.
No, but he's a square.
Nice.
Thanks.
Nice.
Yeah. And basically, he opposes the proposed marriage of Hocklips to Saffredin.
Yeah, and the Doctor has a massive go at him. Yeah. He calls him a butcher.
Yeah, exactly.
And unfortunately, you do not have any brain at all.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah, nicely done. Now you're really demonstrating your tact and diplomacy.
Exactly. And now Leicester hates him and will from now on.
Yeah, essentially try to kill him. So, cut back to Saladin's pad. Saladin is not a huge fan of the wedding either. But he basically tells his brother, you know what, Saffredin, it's all cool. You can marry this chick. But, like, I'm kind of skeptical, so let's also plan for warfare.
Yeah. Well, he's a smart dude.
That's like, so reasonable.
He's a good, smart dude.
Yeah.
So he's like, I want peace. I really would like it, but I think this is unlikely to bring it about. So let's raise the army. We'll have them standing, waiting.
Yeah.
But you go for it.
Yeah.
You go for it.
And whichever occurs, be it like a day of merriment or a day of bloodshed, we will be prepared.
Yeah. Then we cut back to Joanna, who we have just been speaking about.
Do we? No, we get the raid.
I haven't got much on it, so you should go.
Okay, so basically, Mr. Bigglesworth recognised Beardy Dude when he captured him, which is really weird, because they knock him out, right?
Yeah.
But he is not captured. He is just knocked out. So Mr. Bigglesworth tells his soldier buddies that, you know what, now you're going to raid this place, we're going to find everyone, like, we're going to find Bob. And Bob, meanwhile, and Sophia, they hear the soldiers approaching. So they have, like, this little safe room. They have, like, basically, what's it called? Panic room.
Panic room.
Yeah, right, basically, okay. Yeah. So they Jodie Foster inside this panic room as two guards enter. And Bob is, like, almost contemplating using the knife. And then, for no reason whatsoever, basically to save Sophia's life, she steps out of the panic room and, like, Vord sneaks around for literally no reason whatsoever. She takes off her shoes, even, so that she can, like, sneak around the room a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't go anywhere. She doesn't try to hit anyone over the head.
She's trying to get a better view. And
yeah, basically. Yeah. And obviously, one of the dudes sees her and apprehends
her. She's standing right out in the open.
Exactly. Yeah. And she does sort of sacrifice herself for Sophia. She's like, oh, yeah, what does it matter if anyone else, like, there's no one else around, and what does it matter? You've got me anyway. So then,
she's a good chick.
Yeah, good chick. Cut to Ian sleeping in the desert, where two thieves approach, knock him out.
Why is he sleeping in the desert again?
Because he's on his way to Mr. Bigglesworth's pad.
Right, okay. And he's just traversing the desert. We didn't see him go into the desert, right?
No. And he's on a horse.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, this bit confused me.
Logistically, it makes no sense. I think he's there because he is, and this is actually according to IMDb trivia for this serial, he went on holiday for part 4.
Yeah, but that doesn't explain why Ian's in the desert.
I think they just needed to write something into the plot whereby he would be
separated from everyone else enough that he could do his filming and go away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he's in the desert. We just get a little cutscene. He's knocked out by these two dudes. And then we cut back to the castle, where we are treated to, without a doubt, the best acting on the show thus far. And it is Rico Corleone and Princess Hotlips arguing about the wedding. And it is a fantastic dialogue.
Okay.
Great piece of acting.
To introduce that, so Joanna's, like, happily talking along with the Doctor and Vicky.
Yeah.
Until they won't talk about what the King's plans are going forward. They clearly know, and they won't talk about it with her. She gets really pissed off with this, and goes over to the King, really upset, like, what the hell's going on?
Well, no, she goes and talks to Leicester Square, and Leicester Square tells her everything, and then she goes to
Rico. Then she goes to the King, and is like, what the fuck? I'm never going to allow that, you bastard, you're treating me like a piece of meat. Yeah, as you say, it's, like, it's intense.
Yeah, it's very intense. Intense scene. And it ends with Rico banishing Doctor.
Yeah. And he banishes it for revealing the secret, essentially, like allowing the secret to get out.
Yeah, even though it was Leicester Square, and the Doc doesn't say, well, hey, dude, it wasn't me, it was Leicester Square.
And eventually, Joanna's going to have to find out that she's being married off.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like it's going to stay a secret forever. What, they're going to blindfold her? I mean, she was just going to turn up. There you go.
throw her at Safadin.
And by the way, Rico could just have asked his sis, like, hey, who told you this?
Yeah.
He just assumes that it's Doctor.
Yeah.
Which is really weird.
But he's like a redhead, so he's fiery, right? So he just like gets taken over by the healing moment.
Yeah, that's
moment. True. Not that you can tell he's a redhead in black
in this monochrome video, anyway. Yeah.
So then, finally, we see Barb being brought to Bigglesworth.
Yeah.
And he's talking, he basically tells her she's going to be tortured, and the only pleasure she has left is sweet death.
Yeah, and death is far away.
Yeah.
And that's the closing line of part three. Part four.
Dun, dun, dun.
The Warlords. Yeah. Oh, so, it's a really good name, by the way. Not that it's relevant in any way.
No, as a lot of them are. The trip.
By the way, explain the Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah.
Explain the Wheel of Fortune to me. Why was that episode called the Wheel of Fortune?
Yeah, very good point.
Oh my god, that makes absolutely no sense. Yeah, exactly. Really? Consult your notes.
I am.
You're not going to find anything.
I guess they were, like, fortunate, then unfortunate. I'm not going to try and justify it.
Yeah. All right, so anyway, Warlords.
So we're still in that same scene where Barb is being threatened with, like, horrible, agonising death.
Yeah.
And Elakir brings out loads of gold coins.
Yeah, and this is so dumb, by the way. This is so dumb.
So he offers these coins to the guards as a reward for, like, doing stuff.
For doing their job.
Yeah.
For basically just for doing their job.
Yeah. But, I mean, I guess it's just like a representation of how pissed off he is with Barb. Yeah. But then, somehow...
She like, hits his hand. Like,
and, of course, sorry, we should explain, we can't see this.
Yeah.
Because it's all still images again, episode four.
Yeah.
But Barb apparently knocks the coins all over the floor. All the guards go down on the floor to pick up the coins.
Yeah.
And she fucks off.
That's it. She literally escapes. No one
by
runs after her.
Some coins out of the guards' hands.
Yeah. No one... Dumb. This is so weird, but Bigglesworth could have just grabbed her.
Yeah.
The guards could have just grabbed her. Everyone could just have been... could just continue to do their job.
Mm-hmm.
But instead they're, like, scrambling for coins. And, like, seriously, perhaps Bigglesworth Incorporated should, like... Maybe
hire some better guards?
They should ought to consider, like, introducing staff training days.
Or maybe...
Because...
Maybe these people should be put on a salary rather than, like, being given gold coins every now and then, because they're clearly so desperate for them.
There is literally not a single mentally unchallenged guard among them.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous. So then we cut to the harem or harem or whatever.
Yeah, so Elakir goes off looking for Barb at this point and runs into the harem.
Yeah. I just want to put a little pin at this point in the plot, so that we can get back to it later on.
Mm-hmm.
We cut to the harem, where the guards aren't normally allowed to go, but Bigglesworth turns up, he and the two guards, whatever, they talk to these two very attractive girls, who essentially just say, well, Barb hasn't come around here yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And by the way, I've even said in my notes, I'm guessing one of them is Beardy's daughter, by the way.
Yeah.
And obviously Barb is hiding in the harem.
Yeah.
Or harem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just want to put a pin there. Let's get back to that in a little bit.
Okay.
Continue, Flappy.
I haven't got a problem so far. So he offers these two very attractive girls a ruby ring for the capture of Barbara.
Yeah.
And when he leaves, obviously Barb comes out, they've been hiding her, and the head hot girl reveals that they all hate Elakir because he's done all sorts of shit to all of them.
Yeah.
And they will never give Barb up.
Well, they're sex slaves, essentially, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then fade to the desert, where Ian has now been tied to the ground Gulliver style.
Yeah.
And what, according
and
to the notes...
The weirdest method of torture.
Oh, it's so weird. According to the notes, the, and I quote, Arab man...
Ibrahim.
Ibrahim.
Yeah.
He pours honey all over Sir Ian, like rubs it over
so
his chest.
He thinks Ian's a rich man and wants to extort him for, like, whatever money he's got. I don't know why he thinks he's rich. Is it just because of the way he's dressed?
I think so.
The way he's dressed.
Yeah, I think so as well.
Ian says he's poor, but that, like, he'll give him a reward if he lets him escape and gets a litter. To which Ibrahim covers him in honey.
Yeah. I would love to have seen this, because I imagine there is a sexual component to this whole manner of torture.
But it's like a James... Like a 60s James Bond method of...
Oh, totally.
He's like, okay, so I'm going to slather you in honey.
And then, like, and do a trail of honey to an ant's nest.
Yeah.
And these ants are, like...
Slowly going to eat you.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's absurd.
Yeah.
Anyway, he also says you'll, like, die out in the sun, which is a bit more reasonable. Mm. If you tie someone up in the desert, they'll just die of desert exposure.
That makes slightly more sense than the ants, to be honest. Anyway, yeah. So now back at Rico HQ, Leicester Square is accusing VD of being traitors. And yeah. This, again, no consequence whatsoever. He leaves. And then Rico, it turns out, has changed his mind. You know what? Fuck it. We're going to have war instead. And he knows that they didn't tell Princess Hotlips either.
Yeah.
He knows, in fact, that it was Leicester Square, but because he needs Leicester Square to, like, be a good soldier.
Well, and
he doesn't want to
Leicester Square, like, controls a lot of troops. And
exactly.
Like, he's expecting to just about do battle now.
Yeah.
So he can't really afford to lose him.
Yeah. And then he tells Doc and Vicky, you know what? You guys are fantastic. Whatever. Let's speed through this. So, like, you guys are fantastic. I will dispatch you to Akka.
Yeah.
And but they plan to return to the TARDIS post-haste.
Well, actually, Richard kind of advises that they should leave. They should get the hell out of Dodge. Like, it's not... I thought he didn't send them anywhere specifically. He was just saying, you should leave because you've made an enemy of Leicester.
Oh, maybe that... Oh, yeah, you're right. But he says, like, go to this place. I think it's called Akka.
Yeah,
but
basically so they can be safe. Doctor tells Vicky that Richard's going to lose and that he'll never see Jerusalem how he dreams, and she's really sad about that.
Yeah, that's true.
And the Doctor, again, reinstates, like, the Prime Directive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah, you're not to fuck with history. Even though I caused the fire of Rome.
Well, not only that, just in much smaller ways. Like, he's been a part of this whole process.
Yeah,
He has been an actor in the process.
Yeah.
Like, it's not...
By virtue of being present,
yeah.
He has altered history.
Oh, and saying stuff, and getting, like, an audience with Richard, and, like,
yeah.
You know, what the fuck?
Like, exactly.
It doesn't make any sense.
Anyway, we also, I don't know if it's now or if it's after Ian struggling to free himself, but we do get a little cutscene of Leicester Square telling this other knight that the Doc is a demon and
yeah.
Vicky is a witch.
Some devil in human form.
Exactly.
Actually says that they're probably traitors, but worse, they could be witches. They
yeah.
could be devils.
And regardless, whatever
they
are...
They have to follow.
They have to follow them, they have to kill them.
Yeah.
Like, even if they're demons, no problem. They cannot withstand, like, a sword.
Yeah.
So then we cut back to the harem, whatever... Where Bob is chatting with this bird named Maimuna, who,
yeah.
Bada Bing, turns out is Beardy's daughter.
Yeah.
And Bob tells her all about Beardy, and Maimuna's like, hey, Mr. Bigglesworth will never think to look for you here. Bingo. Let's return to the pin. Here was the first fucking place they went. That was the first place they checked for Bob.
Okay, but do they mean...
God damn it.
Do they mean they're not going to come back here? Like, they've already ticked this off as a possibility. Because, as you say, it was the first place they went.
That is the only, option.
But like when they went there
originally... Surely, the fact that he gave them, like, he offered a ruby ring in exchange for information about them, surely that means that he considers the harem a possibility.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I kind of feel like maybe this makes sense.
But maybe that's why he's ticked it off. Because he thinks, oh, these are just stupid slave girls. I've offered them a ring. If Barb turns up, they will tell me.
Okay.
That could make sense.
Sure. No, that's a good argument. In the meantime, we get a little bit of a caption, courtesy of the people who reconstructed this. Another chick, Fatima, is, and I quote, listening intently.
Yeah.
Then back to the desert, where Ian manages to escape.
Well, Ian's got really desperate and tells Ibrahim that he actually does have gold.
Yeah. It's in my boot.
And it's quite similar to the way Barb escapes. Like, when she knocked the gold coins. Like,
this
is pretty similar.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I've got gold in my boot. Ibrahim's like, oh, let me check. And
yeah.
Ian, like...
Unties one foot. He goes, no, actually, it's in my other boot. He unties the other foot.
And Ian, I mean, we don't get to see it, but he, like, kicks him in the face.
Yeah, he kicks the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Then manages to free his hands, which he had terrible difficulty with before. But now that his legs are free, he can free his hands.
Yeah, and under the pain of death, he forces Ibrahim to take him to Lydda.
Yeah, actually, we should have put a pin into this earlier on as well, because Ibrahim says... You know what? The palace, Mr. Bigglesworth Pad,
mm-hmm.
that place is literally just a walk away.
Right, yeah.
Why did Ian stop in the middle of the day to have a nap when he is on horseback?
On horseback, and it's a couple of minutes walk.
Exactly. Literally makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, I guess Ian didn't know where he was going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. So then, cut back to the harem, where Maimuna explains to Bob that there is no way to escape, but she's going to show her the exit from the window anyway, and then Fatima
is leisurely... very suspicious.
Yeah, and she leisurely exits the harem.
Yeah.
What the hell? Like, there is no way to escape, but she literally just opens the door and walks out. In fact, she walks straight to Mr. Bigglesworth.
Yeah, and tells Alakir about Bob.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we assume. She goes, like, hey, you mentioned something about a ring, I believe?
Yeah.
And we also get a little cutscene of Beardy lurking outside, which means that he was apprehended by Bigglesworth and the soldiers, and then promptly let go.
Roaming free inside.
Like, they didn't even take his dagger.
The secure encampment.
No. Yeah, exactly. So then, at the palace gates, Ian and Ant Guy, they have arrived and they found a dead guard.
Yeah, and again, we should have put a pin in this, because Ibrahim completely changes his allegiances.
No, it's so weird.
When, and, like, in the dumbest way, like, Ian is, like, he tells him, I've come here to kill Elakir, basically.
Yeah.
And Ibrahim's like, oh, no, no, no. Now, I'm completely trustworthy. You can rely on Ibrahim.
Yeah, you can always trust
him. Yeah, you can always, like, even when he's torturing you with ants and honey, you can always trust Ibrahim. So Ian tells him to go off and steal some horses.
Yeah, wait. Let's put a pin in this as well. So Ibrahim, Ant-Man, tells Sir Ian, because Mr. Bigglesworth has caused even the rich people of Lida to be poor, there is, like, basically no one to steal from anymore.
Yeah.
So, like, being a thief, it's no longer possible. Like, essentially, you can't make a living being a thief.
Yeah, because there's no one to steal from.
Exactly. So, if you kill Mr. Bigglesworth, that's great. Spoiler alert, he's literally just gonna, he's single-handedly going to stroll into the palace stables and steal every single horse that Mr. Bigglesworth owns. One idiot Ant-Man. Like, if you can't steal from the other rich people, just clearly you can steal from Bigglesworth. Just do that.
And also, if he's so good at stealing that he can just walk into those stables and steal those horses, why is he so poor? He's clearly a master thief.
Yeah, exactly.
who can't even bring down Ian, who's knocked out.
Yeah. So then we get what I think I have appropriately summarized in bullet point form in my notes.
Go on.
Because it is ridiculous how quickly everything happens. Do you want to do one bullet point each?
Well, it's so what this ending, like, this ending reminded me a lot of other endings.
I've made a note, this is like the end of a road trip. It is, because everything converges just on one place. Yeah.
Well, that happened a little bit in the Web Planet as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it was just like, all of a sudden, and obviously it was much worse in the Web Planet, but all of a sudden, everything's over.
Yeah, and
the bad thing's dead, and everyone's fine.
Yeah, that's true. And in fact, there's another similarity with the Web Planet end, because Ian, or Sir Ian now, turns up, and then it's basically over, even though he has done nothing.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so
his very presence caused the end.
Yeah. do you want to do the bullet points? Should we do one each, like every other one? Sure. All right, so here we go.
Maimuna says Fatima betrayed them.
How does she know that? She has no way of knowing that. Okay, so then Mr. Bigglesworth storms in.
Yeah, Beardy stabs him in the back.
Then he's reunited with his daughter.
Fatima arrives and screams.
Ian arrives, followed by guards. This place, by the way, has a fracking open door policy. Yeah.
Fight.
Yeah, and then the girls presumably kill Fatima. But do they also escape?
We don't know. Yeah. Well, again, that could just be the still images. We don't see what happens.
Okay, that is true. But literally, all of this happens within the space of 1 minute.
Less than a minute.
Yeah, less than a minute. Yeah. Right.
Again, it's like the Web Planet. It's just like, bam, and everything's over.
Yeah, it's so weird. So then we cut outside, where Ian now buys the stolen horses from Ant-Man. Yeah. Like, he is now turned into best buds with this dude.
Well, and it says in the caption that he does it with Elakir's money.
Yeah, he must have stolen
the
money.
He must have stolen Elakir's money.
Yeah, and then buy
this guy for the horses.
Yeah.
This guy who was torturing him for no reason.
Yeah. Now, who is now referring to Sir Ian as his brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then they leave, Barbara and Ian, they leave on horseback, presumably.
Yeah.
And we cut to the forest where King Rico's men are assembling.
Mm-hmm.
And Doc and Vaporub are, like, nearby, contemplating how to get past them to the TARDIS.
Yeah, because they're in the way, and Lester makes it quite clear he means to kill the Doc.
Exactly.
So they start creeping through the bushes, we're told in a caption.
Nice.
Somehow, Vicky gets through.
Yeah, the doctor sends her through.
Yeah, but the doctor's spotted, and he's apprehended.
Yeah, and then Ian arrives and tricks Leicester Square in, like, the most amazing way.
Yeah, no, it's really good.
It's like, so good.
And he uses his assumed identity. He turns up and he's like, I am Sirian of Jaffa. This man is the worst traitor ever. He's murdered all my troops. I must kill him. It's brilliant. Like, it's really clever. And he's like, you're right. You've got the higher claim on his head.
You may kill him. And Doctor basically goes, like, you know what? If I'm going to die, may I please have one last request? They're like, yeah, sure, dude. Whatever. It's like, please may I look upon Jaffa one last time.
Yeah. And then I really like the ending, because obviously they run into the TARDIS and the TARDIS dematerialises.
Yeah.
And and Lester's like, oh my god, poor Sirian, poor brave Sirian. He's been spirited away by this she-devil and this witch.
And they basically pull a Marinus.
It's actually really quite funny.
It's very funny, and they basically pull a Marinus because they see the TARDIS dematerialising and they just go like, let's never speak of this again.
Yeah.
Like, let's never tell anyone about this ever, because basically we're going to be made
We're going to look really stupid. Yeah. Yeah, that's the exact ending of Marinus.
Yeah. So then the TARDIS...
it's not in the history. So back in the TARDIS, it's all happy days for about 15 seconds.
Wait. This is the sexist soundbites.
Oh, go on.
Okay. So first of all, they've clearly been in the TARDIS for a little while, because they've been cracking all these jokes about knights.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to hear one of the jokes. They're all like just shit knight puns.
Night and day.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, oh, you've deserved a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
And then Barbara speaks up. And the Doctor, it just turns 180. He goes from, like, really happy, just dropping puns left, right and centre like there's no tomorrow, to mega sexist. And he goes, soundbites?
Soundbites.
Soundbites.
Oh, my dear young woman, why don't you go and have a cup of tea or something?
What? And then, do you want to do the ending?
Well, basically, I think one of our reviewers actually said this. Like,
oh, I haven't read the reviews yet.
I just caught a little snippet on my email. We've watched this whole episode, and it's all in still frame images. And then the final little bit of it, because, like, it's the end, it's the beginning start of the next episode,
which
we have footage of that.
Yeah.
It lasts about 15 seconds with the sexist remark and, like, the laughy jokey, and then all of a sudden it's back to still frame. Like, it's not actually still frame, but everybody stands still.
Yeah, well, we know it's not a still frame because the TARDIS machinery is moving.
Yeah.
All, like, completely frozen.
It doesn't go back to still frame. They freeze.
Yeah.
As they have been for the entire of the last episode.
Yeah, exactly. And what's the next one? The Space Museum or something like
that?
I can't
remember what it's called.
I'm assuming that they're now basically going to be made to be, like, wax statues in some sort of museum.
Yeah.
Like, they're frozen and are going to be an exhibit, essentially.
It's a really good start.
Awesome start. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Like, is somebody going to break into the TARDIS? What's going to happen?
Who knows?
Who knows? Oh, God.
You're just going to have to either watch the next serial or listen to the next episode of Who Back When to find out.
I think you could do the latter. Yeah. Anyway, I think thus concludes
our massive Who Back When summary.
Review and summary of The Crusade.
That's true.
So, shall we get to our reviews?
Let's do reviews.
Do you want to go first?
Sure, happily. Not that I've prepped anything.
Neither have I.
Not even a score. We'll see what we get. I think it's a damn shame that we've lost two episodes here.
Of course.
Or two parts. If we had lost two parts of the Web Planet, honestly, I wouldn't have cared.
Yeah.
Even though, I guess, enduring just the audio of the Web Planet would have been almost doubly as bad.
Do you know what? I might have even said to you, let's cancel Who Back When for a week.
But it is a damn shame, because this is, I think, a fantastic story. I think it's really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as good as some of the other historicals, though. Some of the other, in this case, really being one or the other. It's not as good as The Reign of Terror.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's really nice. For a short serial, it's got a great plot, it's got some terrific characters, it's got, like, a very clear good guy, bad guy type scenario, and I just think it's fun. I think it's, a nice romp. Nicely condensed. Love the bits of trivia. I know you weren't that impressed by it, but I love the fact that we get to see, like, other actors suddenly pop up in more or less recognisable forms.
Yeah.
And in essence, like, you know what? I'm going to cut this very, very short, because we've got some listener reviews as well. I'm going to give this 3.2
That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm giving this...
Because that was the exact number I was
giving. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I'm going to have to do it anyway.
Yeah, do it. I'm giving this 3.2. I love the fact that we've got Julian Glover in this, by the way. And, yeah, there you go, 3.2. Take it away, Flappy.
Well, my reasoning for the 3.2, I think, as I've said in previous episodes, the historicals are of a very consistent quality.
Yeah.
Like, as opposed to the sci-fi episodes, which are very much
up and down. Constantly.
Like, they can be brilliant, they can be absolutely fucking illogically pants.
Total pants.
But the historicals always, you know, set up a good framework, have good plot. Like devices in them, and they move along steadily. And this was no exception.
Yeah.
It wasn't my favourite of the historicals. It didn't get particularly convoluted. I didn't feel I really grew to know Richard the Lionheart as I did, for example, Robespierre.
Sure.
Like, I felt I got a bit of insight into Robespierre.
I think if they had added more information about Corleone and, like, maybe elaborated on his relationship with his brother, that sort of thing, I probably would have given this a higher mark, by the way.
Yeah. And if we'd actually seen some crusade fighting, that'd have been pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. Why is this called a crusade?
Yeah, like...
I guess it takes part during
the crusades.
Yeah.
But, like, one of the crusades.
One of the crusades, but there's no information... Well, like, there's not even a mention of, like, you know what? These people are infidels. We need to convert them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Princess Hoplips refers to them as infidels, but that's it.
But... Plus marks for the portrayal of Saladin. I thought that was really excellent. And as I said during our review, I think it was really good of the BBC to actually show some historical balance.
Yeah, Tyler Durden does a great job.
Yeah, and not just portray brown people as bad, which I thought, you know, was really good of them. Mm. As you said, there's only one bad guy, really. One bad Arab guy, and he is necessary to drive the plot.
Actually, you know what? Wait, I take that back. When I said that, I actually meant Ant-Man. Because we have Mr. Bigglesworth, who's clearly the antagonist. He's clearly Mr. Terrible, right? But Ant-Man is the only person who is described in kind of racist terms as that Arab guy that you cannot trust.
Yeah.
Right?
But is he meant to be light relief? Like, it's still racist, but he is, like, light relief racism.
Yeah.
He's just, like, a raggedy Arab man who, like, yeah.
Kinda.
But anyway, to sum up. So, as I said, honestly, 3.2 was the mark I was going to give it.
I think
it is of a consistent standard for the other historicals, but I don't think it's one of the better historicals.
Sure.
Hence, slightly lower mark. But 3.2, excellent portrayal of Saladin et al.
Yeah.
The whole thing tied together well. I mean, I guess because it was short and because we were missing two episodes, it sucked a little bit of the fun out of it.
A little bit. So, listener reviews.
Listener reviews.
And oh my god, do we have some fucking splendid reviews.
Well, people, you really outdid yourself this week.
Nice. We literally just read them.
Yeah. They're brilliant. And the first review comes from a long-time contributor. It's Al, who you can follow on Twitter, @phrase_Alex.
Hey, Al.
Al says, my Crusade review, which ran really long, this episode was utterly fantastic. Really just great. Particularly, the costuming and sets are great. But also, the general story, the writing, and especially the action bits. Hell, even Vicky wasn't bad. The whole serial also manages to shirk away from the Davis Principle. Although most of the suspense concerns Barb and some very scary sexual vibes from various bad guys, she's actually not a helpless damsel in distress. Her history skills are more apparent here than Ian's science skills ever were, even knowing Richard the First's hair colour.
Nice. The action surrounding many of the scenes is very strong and quite impressive on both sides of the fighting, leading to unusually strong cliffhangers where I actually felt compelled to keep watching. Unfortunately, a lot of this compelling nature was really hindered by the reconned parts. And really, the recons are the major fault of the story. Obviously, it's not the story's fault that it has been lost, but at least we have the two parts we do have. Although that makes watching part 1 and 3 such an enjoyable experience, it makes for a striking contrast with parts 2 and 4. The major action scenes of part 4 are almost incomprehensible. Mm. Once again, we must grade on a curve, but it's still impossible to overlook.
There is some good comic relief in this story, especially with Vicky's role, where she does seem very young here, definitely not in her 20s.
Although I told you so!
Shut up. Although I don't think her portrayal age-wise is very consistent across her stories. Yes, totally agreed. This also does lead to a very creepy and odd exchange between her and the Doctor, which I think was meant to be grandfatherly, but is just weird with her previous portrayals as possibly a 20-something girl.
Totally agreed. Could not agree more.
This also does a great job portraying the grey morality of the Crusades, with the Doctor chastising both sides for needing to fight. This in particular leads to a great monologue from Joanna and a really heated scene between her and Richard the Lionhearted.
As I said, the best acting so far, by the way. All right, so Al goes on. The ending scene still manages to be tense and comedic despite the recon status of it. This serial also gets points for Ian's knighting and the exchanges of the Doctor and the traders. Very nice. This is also a really direct serial, feeling pretty constrained, generally straightforward. This is better than being directionless, although a more loose structure, such as in the Romans, can allow for more breathing room for the story. It's obvious from the beginning, though, that it'll all connect when the Doc and Ian are meeting the people Barb and her fellow captor are pretending to be. Overall, this story gets a 4.5 for very few detractors, such as a few odd logical leaps, some weirdly sexual bits, and the necessary points taken off for the recon status.
Also, happy note, just this month we got 9 out of the 106 missing episodes back, so there's hope we may see this episode in full one day.
That is very true. Couldn't agree more with that one.
Couldn't agree more.
Gotta say, 4.5, that's quite a lot.
That is quite a lot.
That's very... Dude, Al, you have a big heart. There. Clearly.
To me, that's quite a lot. But, you know, I may be being very harsh because of the recon status.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it did. It sucked a lot of the fun out of it.
It does. I mean, like, it's unavoidable, right?
Do you know what? I did know from the start, obviously, there were two episodes here that were reconstructed, but I was really hoping the final one wouldn't be.
I know. It's a shame to end on one.
Yeah, it's a shame to end on one.
Al, dude, thank you so much for your review. Very nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. And some very good points raised.
All right. Review number two comes from Davis Williams. People who are not Davis, look him up on Twitter. He is at ShrubThe. And he says, what a relief. After The Web Planet, I was reluctant to watch The Crusade, but it was much better. Even with two of the episodes missing, right off the bat, the Davis Principle gets instituted in this episode. This is interesting, by the way. Totally contradicts the previous listener review. He goes on, thanks a lot, Barbara. Then we have Ian doing something useful as he rescues Barbara. The fight scene at the very beginning was executed very well, in my opinion, and I'm glad that episode... I agree as well. And I'm glad that that episode was with us today. Unfortunately, I found parts of this episode to be somewhat boring, though that may just have been the fault of the reconstructions.
Hey, look, we finally have a historical serial where creepy men don't try to rape Barbara. It's funnily fit for children. Oh, wait, the dude in episode 3 wants her to kill his daughter and herself if they're found.
In which case they would be raped, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sorry, almost
certainly. The rape thing.
Sorry, Davis, for interrupting. All right, go on.
Also in episode 3, we have a paedophilic shopkeeper rubbing all over Vicky.
Oh, wow.
That depends on whether you think Vicky's a child. Finally, they just had to bring up The Web Planet again when Barbara talks about their adventure on an alien world ruled by insects. Ugh, don't remind me.
Davis goes on, I give this story a 3.2.
Popular mark.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Because it was so much better than the previous story. I mark off because it wasn't quite as interesting as the Romans or the Reign of Terror. Oh well. Finally, the TARDIS crew freezing at the very end didn't have the intended effect. They had been frozen for the past 25 minutes.
Yeah, that was the one over. Yeah. But I've got to say, Davis, I basically feel the same way. Yeah. Like, of the reviews, that is the review I feel most similar to.
Oh, well, you know, we've got more reviews coming, dude.
Well, I know, but we've read them, dude.
Dude, spoiler alert! All right. Next up, we have
JD.
John David.
Marius Kane.
Yeah, follow him on Twitter.
Always. And this is our personal hero. So, JD says, Barbara and her team land in the Holy Land and is kidnapped and threatened with rape for the 10th story since she stumbled onto the TARDIS.
That's literally one sentence in and I'm already laughing my ass off, JD. All right. The good. What an amazing guest cast. Julian Glover and Bernard Kay would be good enough alone, but then you have Jean Marsh, who apart from being an amazing actress, will enter Doctor Who lore very, very shortly as Sarah Kingdom, and then 24 years later as Morgaine in Battlefield, and would marry the future Doctor, John Pertwee.
That is all hot.
Awesome trivia.
Ian and Barbara are smouldering together on screen. And finally, Ian does something useful after his character has been pointless for the last few stories. Good point. But Barbara once more takes on the role of main character far more than anyone else in the Hartnell years.
True. Jean Marsh as Joanna gets simply the best speech probably done in Doctor Who so far, where she just destroys Richard the Lionheart around the arranged marriage. Real passion.
Nice.
That's that same scene, dude.
Yeah, I know.
Such a good scene.
The bad. Vicky's irritation index is only a 3.2 in this episode, mainly due to the fact that she spends bits of the story cuddling the Doctor, and it's faintly creepy.
I love the irritation index. Alright. Overall, coming after the Web Planet, anything would deserve a 5.0. But this stands as a good story on its own. It's not particularly fast-paced, but the acting and the script brings this up to a 4.2.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it so much, JD.
Yeah.
Brilliant review.
Yeah, if anyone can find that much joy in the story, I'm very pleased. But, you know, that's awesome. That's a great review, as
But you know what? We didn't pick up on the fact that the irritation index was fairly low. I mean,
Wait, you said fairly low. He's put that at the same level as we put the entire story, dude.
Well, like, you know, like, she didn't speak much. Like, if that helped.
Oh, that's true. Well, she was basically absent.
She had that like light-hearted moment where she's like, "I'm not a boy," and
yeah, and that was it.
Yeah, pretty much. Our next review comes from Gina, and Gina is at Gina Guerrero 1. Thank you so much.
People who are not Gina Guerrero, please. Not please. I command you, in the name of all that is good and pure in the universe, follow Gina on Twitter.
She has contributed to Who Back When third most. Actually, she might even be number 2 behind you. I'd say Gina's done more...
Behind me?
Yeah, I would say Gina's done more for this show than me, but there you go.
Oh, Jesus, yes.
Anyway, Gina says, I can actually say I enjoyed this story. I have difficulty staying engaged with the reconstructions for episode 2 and 4. I think this is one of the first times I've found the plot, cast and sets equally interesting and engrossing. The TARDIS crew once again was split up after landing in 12th century Palestine during the time of the Third Crusade. I love the parallels in the sibling relationships between King Richard and his sister and Saladin and his brother.
Ooh, nice.
And how they were used to flesh out each leader's character. Ella Keir was an amazing villain, sinister and obsessive. This story had dark elements without getting too dark, including the many deaths, the advantage versus disadvantage of war, and the price of pride.
Nicely phrased. She goes on, I have noticed common tropes in these last few stories. The Doctor and Vicky get caught up in some political intrigue that Vapor Up, nice one, just giggles it's and catchy. Whines about, which she thankfully did less of in this story. The Doctor actively getting himself involved in said intrigue and later complaining about being in it. Barbara is kidnapped and spends the episode bravely and cleverly escaping, being caught and escaping again, and Ian having a decreased storyline with little to do until he is needed to save someone.
Well done for keeping up the voice.
Thanks.
I'm finding that as the writers are increasing and expanding the Doctor's role and abilities, there is less for the character of Ian to do. Have you guys noticed that the historicals, though missing any sci-fi elements, are the better quality stories? Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Even with the reconstructions, the story was enjoyable and a reprieve from the Web Planet. So my rating is 4.1 because it was an overall solid story and we got a semi-shirtless Ian. Hello, Chicos!
3 exclamation points.
Nice.
Gina.
I feel quite a lot of people are marking this story up just because of the juxtaposition between this and the Web Planet. I agree. like it's a different series altogether.
Yeah,
like,
no, it really is.
I can't believe it's the same people making this shit.
I know, it's ridiculous. But
there you go.
Can you believe that this was written by the same dude who did Edge of Discretion?
Oh, fuck it. Oh.
Which is ridiculous. Like, this one has fantastic dialogues, whereas Edge of Discretion had a spring.
Yeah.
Like, it's just dumb, right?
Like, do you reckon for The Edge of Destruction, he was, like, drafted in at the last minute, and they were like, holy shit, like, our main writer's dropped out. Can you fill the void?
I reckon...
You've got 27 minutes.
No, I reckon he is actually a good writer, because he wrote this, right? Even though, what's-his-face, Mr. Spooner, he did the whole edits, right?
Yeah.
But I reckon he's a good writer, except he just completely forgot that he was even hired to write Edge of Destruction until, like, the bus ride. To BBC.
Yeah.
Right? Anyway, Gina, thank you so much for your review.
Thank you so much, Gina.
As per usual, fantastic stuff. We have one more. Okay.
Gonna give you a guess as to who this one is. Here's a little hint. He's written a novel.
It's enormous.
That's what she said. I wish.
Slam dunk. So, as usual, Kyle, we're going to have to shorten this a little bit.
Yeah, sorry about that, dude.
Everyone else.
People who are not Kyle Rath, follow him on Twitter. That is an order. He is at Sinister Super Spy. That's super without any vowels.
So, as per usual, Kyle, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to cut this down a little bit to be fair to others and to ourselves. But
yeah, someone needs to leave, and it ain't me because I'm at home right now.
But it's a seriously fantastic review. And seriously, people, check the whole thing out.
Oh my god,
it's posted on the website.
It seriously is. You know what, Kyle?
Some awesome trivia in there.
Yeah, Kyle, you've written great reviews in the past. I think this might be your best one. It is fucking jam packed with trivia and like just awesome Who knowledge.
And I wish we had time for the whole thing, I truly do.
Yeah, that's what she said.
But anyway, Kyle begins. What better way to wash away the stink of the web planet than the far superior serial, The Crusade? Despite missing two episodes in their entirety, I have to say I thoroughly enjoyed it. And William Russell's narration, at least in my copy, is engaging and mixed well with the surviving audio to keep interest. Didn't get that.
And then, as per usual, he has listed a few plus and minus points. In this case, what works and what doesn't work. You should check out the whole list, obviously. We're going to pick some of our favourites. I will start with a what works, because we have actually touched upon this before, and it does contain a hilarious line. So, number one, Julian Glover, Jean Marsh, Walter Randall, trifecta. The first two actors command every scene, no matter which scene they were in. Specifically, when Joanna confronts Richard about his marriage plans for her, incredible!
And Walter Randall's performance as El Akir is perhaps the most terrifying singular enemy to date to appear in Doctor Who. Like, this guy is a total evil dickwad, and creepy as fuck. Amazing.
I hate Flappy for stealing that line. I want to read that line. That is a great line. Yeah. Honorary mention to Bernard Key as Saladin, he goes on. Such an understated performance. Very true.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's very, very good. Bernard Key, man. Bernard Key. Tyler Durden. What a dude.
Amazing.
All right.
And we've picked out our favourite weak point of this episode that is listed, which is the weak finish. He says, I didn't buy into the Earl of Leicester's focused dislike of the Doctor at all. Earl just wanted to fight the good fight, demonstrated by his impassioned speech with the Doctor in Richard's court, which is a brilliant scene, by the way.
There was no investment for revenge against the Doctor once Richard conceded war was the only option, so why bother?
Except for Sir fucking Ian Chesterton swooping in and saving the day. Keep that part. That was awesome.
Yes, it was. There have been many rumours this past year of supposedly lost serials being discovered. I've watched the two already released, and it was pure pleasure. It is my hope that the two missing episodes from The Crusade are among those relocated at some point and remastered. With a stellar supporting cast, a tremendous historical backdrop, and a production value evident by its quality, this is a Doctor Who story that needs to be complete.
I give it a 3.8 only because the reconstructions just don't do enough justice to this fantastic production.
Hombre, freaking amazing review as per
Amen.
Usual. And
Amen.
We're not doing it justice with this fragmented reading of it. People, if you have a spare 3 days, read the whole thing
and
in its entirety.
And you trust us at all. Please.
Yeah, exactly. Kyle, fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
I believe that concludes this episode of Who Back When.
I think it does indeed.
Yeah.
What a time was had by all.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
People, please keep submitting your mini reviews. We love reading them. Follow us on Twitter. I am at Ponkin.
I'm at One Too Many Mornings.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah.
And like us on Facebook. Have you already liked us on Facebook? Great. Tell your friends to do so as well.
Even if they hate Doctor Who. That's yes. Very
And please do rate and review us on iTunes. It totally helps the show and totally makes our day. On that note, shout out to Totem Jeff,
yeah.
Who followed JD's example and our advice and freaking left a fantastic 5-star review on iTunes. If you want to read that review, which you should, then go to iTunes, read it right now. What are you waiting for? And when you're there, why not write one of your own?
I'm so pleased to hear from you, Totem Jeff. Submit a review. We will read it out.
Yeah, yeah.
So pleased to hear.
Yeah, yeah. Send us a mini review. Thank you so much. People. Oh, wait. We nearly forgot. People, the 50th anniversary con is steadily approaching. We will be there on the 23rd of November,
mm-hmm.
2013. If you're going to be there as well, let us know. We will also be organizing some sort of Who Back When meetup. surrounding the convention dates.
Yeah, it's a good excuse to get drunk.
Yeah.
Basically.
Have a drink and just exchange Who knowledge, maybe some hugs and high fives. So if you're interested, if you're in the London area, you want to join us for a little Who Back When Doctor Who meetup, then follow us, because we will be announcing a proper date, time, location and whatnots in a very short amount of time. Yeah.
Check it out. Normally, in this situation, I would say Auf Wiedersehen. But seeing as what Auf Wiedersehen actually means is till I see you again. To you, sir, I will simply say goodbye.
You'll catch us in the next episode of Who Back When, where we will be reviewing the Space Museum.
Wow.
Yeah. Until then, Shamalama Ding Dong, and catch you on the flip side.
And catch you on the flap side.
Cha-chao.
Who Back When.